Verdugo back to the pin. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. However, there is no Jerry this week. Jerry is hard at work getting ready for a second game at Fenway Park in Boston tonight and pinch hitting for the first time in his career, I'm willing to bet, is Lenny DiNardo. Lenny, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing excellent. I'm glad to fill the gigantic shoes of the infamous Jerry Remy.
You are no Rem dog, and that is probably a good thing in the big picture. When's the last time you pinch hit for somebody?
Oh, my gosh. I don't think I've ever had a pinch hit, to be honest.
Yeah, what, I mean, high school?
Well, I was getting pinch hit four in high school.
Okay, so the Red Sox, the quintessential ugly win last night. I mean, as bad as it gets, right? They had a 9-2 lead. They're rolling. You're laughing. Finally, they can give all the relievers a break. All of a sudden, Austin Bryce gives up four. We got a game. Cabrera's up a couple of times with a chance to really do some damage, but he's a mess right now. When you played, Lenny, and you had a game like that, fans, I mean, we shut off the TV last night like, ugh, what was that? You know, I know they win. Okay, it's good. It's good. The end result is good. As a player, are you any less happy after an ugly win like that? Or is it a win is a win is a win? We grinded it out. Let's move on.
So you're going to have games like that. It's not going to be 2-0, 2-1. You're going to have games where you're going to be basically grinding to the last out because the other team is just climbing up. Every time you score a run, they keep battling back, and you're going to be on the other end of that as well when the other team gets ahead and you're going to be trying to climb your way back into it. So I thought it made for a pretty interesting and fun game to watch. You know, there's the games like you had last week with DeGrom where it's just a duel all the way to the very end. Last night was a ton of offense. As a fan, you got to love seeing the long ball. You know, it's what the game's built around right now. There was a ton of it last night.
Did you see that they got a new improved deluxe model of a cart in the dugout finally?
Yeah. I got a little bit of a look at it. It's blue. It might be a little bit comfortable. I don't know. What is that? AC and leather in there?
Eight-track. It's got an eight-track. Yeah. They went old school.
Okay.
It's, I think it's wider and shallower. I think
okay.
That's the big thing. Not as big a drop to get in.
Exactly.
And a little more room for the plus-sized home run hitters.
You know, you got to be able to incorporate a new model in every year. You're going to have the cup holders eventually and, you know, maybe a room in the back for another guy. Maybe a base runner will be able to fit in the car next year, you know.
Yeah, you have like the two-man bobsled version and the four-man bobsled version, right? The Olympics. My worry is, and I'm going to talk to Sam Kennedy tonight, and strongly urge him to resist the temptation to put advertising on the side of it, right? Wouldn't that just take away from the purity of the home run celebration?
Yeah, and then it kind of turns into NASCAR at that point, you know. And then, I'm okay with, you know what, maybe some Red Sox Foundation or you know, the home base program, something like that. You know, nothing money-making, something respectable that's giving back. You know, that's something that the Red Sox and everybody surrounding the Red Sox is really known for. They're really good at that. So as far as money-making, nah.
You're on to something with the foundation. We could ask Becca that they could auction off a ride in the home run cart. See, that is, if the Red Sox win, maybe after the game, you know, players would have to clear out. But then you could come in and they could give you a little push down the tunnel.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. You know, in regards to the cart in itself, you know, you got to worry about getting in the car slow and you got to get out slow. And you just hit a home run, so the adrenaline's flowing. So you got to be able to dial it back. You'll notice, though, right at the end of that trail, there's always a trainer sitting there waiting to kind of just inspect the cargo once it gets out.
You ever think it's crossing his mind? Like, I went to medical school, served a residency, you know, was amongst the brightest minds in medicine. And I'm here to help a guy out of a laundry cart after he hits a home run.
There's going to be analytics involved at some point. I can see it now. The proper way, you've got to, you know, 3 points of contact going into the cart and coming out. You know, it's there's
What's
proper
the
mechanics.
The launch angle, the angle of getting out of the cart. You launch at the plate and then you got to unlaunch when you get back in.
they might just add an ejection seat at some point, so these kind of pop out a little bit while they.
Those lazy boys that have the hydraulics, so you don't have to step out of them. You just get one of those, right? Just launch the guy out.
You look at the first cars and how far we've come from there. You know, the evolution of the cart's gonna go a long way, I think, as long as they keep hitting bombs.
See, that's why we invited you. Jerry Remy never could have gone 3 minutes on the home run cart. That's why, you know, you were the first choice. The win at home was huge. They're back above 500 at Fenway Park. And Alex Cora had some interesting comments last night. When I asked him, of course, you know, because I'm always asking the tough questions, Lenny. Nobody else will ask the tough questions. I'm in there slugging away. And I asked him, what was it about Fenway Park? Maybe dimensions, maybe something that was making his team struggle. Here's what he said. Is there anything you've been able to sort of put your finger on as to why that hasn't happened yet, why the team hasn't been able to get going at Fenway?
I told Sam that he needs to change the music.
But from a baseball perspective, is there any, you know, dimensions, guys play different? Do you see anything? Have you been able to find anything?
The music, brother, the music.
All right, so what are we going to hear tonight then? What are we going to hear tonight?
I don't know, Macarena or something. I have no idea. I mean, tomorrow, Cinco de Mayo, we might have mariachis over there in right field and probably it's going to help us out. No, honestly, and this has been going on since 19. You know, it's in 19, we were really good on the road and we struggled at home. And we just got to find a better way. I don't know if the at-bats are differently. We are more conscious about the wall in left field. It's right there and your approach changes and you want to pull the ball instead of staying up the middle. I don't know. I think, you know, it is something that as a team, we have to do better. That's the bottom line. And we haven't done a good job since 19. And if we want to get to where we want to get, you got to dominate at home. You got to be a lot better. But at the same time, I read something today that, in our division, I think the only team that has a positive home record is actually the Jays, and they're playing in Dunedin. So, well, maybe, I mean, I don't know, go to Worcester and play there and see if it changes.
All right, so let's start with the music, Lenny, because you're a music guy. He says Sam Kennedy needs to play better music at Fenway Park. A little bit of a challenge for the guys upstairs now.
Well, I'll tell you, there's so many different genres of music, and one type of music's going to pick somebody up, but it might drag somebody else down. So you got to be able to go out there and pick an eclectic mix that's going to pump everybody up, the crowd, the players. And, a lot of the players get to pick their own songs, whether they're coming out from the bullpen or going up to bat. So, yeah, music's huge. Music's huge. It's a huge factor at Fenway Park. And they've done a historically great job.
You weren't around when Manny Ramirez had them play a song that just had F-bombs all over it. Were you there for that?
I don't remember. I might have, but you know what?
I think it was after you left. I think it was a little later in the aughts. Just kind of ran up a CD last minute, said, hey, play this. And oh my God, like just, you know, some hardcore gangsta rap stuff with just, oh my God.
That's a lot of trust being able to just take a CD from somebody and just plug it in, press play.
That is no longer the system at Fenway Park. This had to be 15 years ago. But back to the real stuff that Alex Cora talked about, the monster, you know, as a pitcher, as a hitter, it's always there. There's no denying how close that big old wall is. That's why it's a monster. And for him to say, maybe my guys are forgetting their approach, because you get home and you say, oh my God, that thing's right there. I'm going to yank 30 of them up into that over 81 home games. Last night, he clearly was stressing it. And I don't want to take credit for the win last night, but I was the one who put the thought in his mind before the game. And then you come out, I think 12 of their hits last night were center field or opposite field. And that's how this team is going to succeed. Center field, opposite field. Clearly he got the message to them last night. And he needs to continue getting that message to them at Fenway Park.
Yeah, I mean, that should be the approach for these hitters. You know, as a pitcher, when I stood on the mound at Fenway Park, it almost felt like you could just kind of reach back there and grab the wall. It does look very, very close from the field, but the wall will give, it will take away. So if you take the approach as a lefty to drive the ball to the monster. You know what? You're talking about an easy double, because a lot of those guys in left field aren't used to playing the ball off the wall. So you see it all the time. They're playing too close. They're not able to get that hop. And a lot of times, whether you're lefty or righty, if you're just shooting for the wall, some of those will actually get up and over if you create enough backspin. So you know what? Take the approach. Go that way as often as possible.
All those hits last night, I thought Alex Verdugo, the opposite field home run up into the monster, was maybe the most important one of the night. Because if Verdugo can do that, he's going to do some damage off that wall.
Absolutely. And he's shown power to all fields throughout the season. And Bogaerts, he does as good a job as anybody getting the hands to the zone. His home run was fantastic. You know, it was one of those things where you needed to have the long ball, because for some reason, the Detroit Tigers, which are really, really bad offensively this year, kept scratching away and kept coming back. So, you know, at the end of the game, you're looking back and seeing how important those home runs were.
Miguel Cabrera, I mean, it's sad to watch him right now. This guy's a future Hall of Famer. I think he's around, he's hitting 106, and it's 0 for 23 with 13 strikeouts right now. I mean, it's sad to see a guy who has done so much and has been one of the best hitters in recent history to go through something like this late in his career.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where he is, he's flirting with 500 home runs right now. So he's, I don't know if he's thinking about it. That could be where, you know, I'm so close to 500 home runs. And I think last year, the year before, I think 2 years ago, he ended up getting like 10 home runs that whole season. So he might be thinking to himself, I better get these now or I'm not going to have the opportunity. I'm not sure. But, you know, you look at a hitter like Cabrera, and you look at a guy like Martinez last year. He had a 2 month span where he was pretty cold throughout. Cabrera has time to get together. He's allowed to slump just like everybody else. He's a professional hitter, and I'm sure at some point you're going to start to see him digging out of that hole just a little bit.
I thought the key play last night was Pavetta getting him to ground into the double play. Fifth inning, he's approaching 100 pitches. You know he's dying for that five innings because he wants the win, and he's given up two hits and a walk, and a run's already in. He's in trouble. Might not get through the fifth inning. The double play from Cabrera. And then he gets out of it, gets the five. Here's what Pavetta had to say after the win.
I really wish I would have limited pitches in that game, you know, got ahead of guys a couple more times, used my breaking ball a little bit more and my changeup more, you know, to be able to get into that sixth, seventh inning. So, I mean, you want to keep the runs as low as possible. I mean, gave up some runs, was able to limit damage when I really needed to. You know, it's just about keeping it as low as possible for these guys so that they can keep doing what they're doing at the time. You know, I think that's what's most important, is just going out, same plan, keep grinding out ABs, and then keep going out pitching up zeros, throwing up zeros.
Nick, what's it like to take the mound in the second with a four spot on the board from the first?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, those guys, it's incredible what I'm seeing here. They're doing a really great job every single day, going out grinding at bats. And when you get a four spot in the first inning, you know, it takes a lot of pressure off you, but you still got a job to do. You still got to get deep into baseball games.
As you know, Lenny, Nick Pavetta has been my pick to click since spring training. I believe this guy is going to continue to have a breakthrough year, but I the more I see of him, the more I hear from him, the more I like his attitude. He's just cocky enough, just confident enough that he, I think, elevates his game because he really believes that he is going to go out there and dominate every fifth day. I love it.
I love the swagger on the mound right there. A few starts ago, I think he threw a borderline pitch that was probably a strike, was a ball, and he walked like 12 steps to the dugout. And you know, he thought it was a strike. What's going on? But you know what? If you don't believe it, nobody else is going to believe it. So you got to go out there and you got to think every hitter is a junior varsity freshman. You got to go cut through this guy like butter. That's what he's been doing. And he's also been a magician when it comes to damage control. Anytime he kind of falls behind, he gives up a walk or two, he's able to kind of boom, flip the switch, damage control, get the ground ball when needed, you know, which is going to happen. You're going to falter a little bit. Can you get out of it? That's the mark of a good pitcher.
I love his comments last week, Jim, you and I did, after he got that win over DeGrom. You know, you beat DeGrom 1-0, which isn't just winning against an ace, but it's literally the slimmest of margins, right? You couldn't give up a run if you wanted to get that win, and he didn't. And for him to come out after and say, listen, my attitude is I'm as good as DeGrom. And then he got it like, well, I mean, I know he's great and one of the best, but I love it. You know, I can't look at him as being up here and I'm down here, because I can't, you can't succeed that way. I'm sure You remember a game like that where you were locked in against an ace and you got to get yourself psyched up to be at his level?
Absolutely. If there's any inkling of, you know what, I'm not cut out for this, I'm not good enough, if I'm not going to do well, if there's any of that in your brain, guess what? That's going to happen. I tell pitchers all the time when I'm working with them, if you're not thinking strike one, if you're thinking, okay, I don't want to throw a ball, I don't want to hit this guy, guess what you remember? Ball. Hit this guy. So you have to have that successful attitude, that affirmation. The last thing you do before you actually go into your windup or the stretch is, you know what, something positive. And he's doing that throughout the season. He knows he's a great pitcher. Is he as good as DeGrom? Who knows? But in his mind,
he's not. I love him, but he's not DeGrom. Maybe he will be, to your point, but he's not. But on that day, he's got to say, I am. That's the only way you're going to beat him.
That's the only way. That's the absolute only way. You have to know that you are the best pitcher in the world on that given day.
Who's the best pitcher you ever had a start against?
Doc Holliday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was in Toronto. Oh. And I think he beat me up pretty good that day.
Sure.
And, I can't remember what the line was. Please don't look it up out there.
Many tweets about that start. Do you remember like thinking about it before? I know pitchers always say, no, I can't think about it. But you think about it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I absolutely thought about it. I think it was probably a spot start or something. I was typically a long relief guy and I'm going to go out there and take the mound against the future Hall of Famer. You can't not think about it in my shoes at that point. But, you know, looking back on it, I wish I would have kind of taken that philosophy that Pivetta has right now. Like, you know what? I'm the best pitcher on the field that given day, no matter who's out there. But yeah, as a pitcher, you're absolutely thinking about who the opponent is when it's the type of caliber pitcher that, you know, a guy like Holliday is or DeGrom. You know, you just can't help but think about that.
DeGrom pushed back from his next start, which is interesting after that. Okay, the other thing I want to hit on real quick is two more things. One is the return of minor league baseball. Chaim Bloom came on the show last night, and we started with that because just the fact that there is actually minor league baseball being played last night for the first time in 19 months is pretty remarkable for the industry. Here's what he said.
Chaim Bloom over at Fenway Park. Chaim, there will be minor league baseball played tonight. How good is it from a developmental standpoint to have these guys playing actual games?
It is just awesome, TC. It's a great day, really, for the game of baseball. Not just for our organization, not just for our staff and players, but it's a great day, you know, for this game to get minor league baseball back into the communities that love it so much. To get all of our players, our future, and the future of the, you know, the game, the future of the industry. Get all those guys out and playing, so they can develop properly. It's really wonderful, and can't wait to see four box scores at the end of the night. It's a beautiful thing.
You know, in the next couple of years, you'll have players coming up who missed that amount of time playing. Is there a concern that that lost time will manifest itself in ways we haven't seen before at the major league level?
Yeah, I think you have to be concerned. We just don't know what that will look like. And there's not a whole lot we can do about it. It's something everybody is battling. So we just need to make sure, as we've tried to do on the major league side, that we're doing everything we can to put our players in a position to succeed, you know, allow them to be healthy and strong for an entire season. And there's a lot of thought and energy that's going into that. But at the end of the day, you know, this is the kind of part of the curveballs that life brings you. This is what the pandemic has thrown at us. And God knows there's been a lot more damage and devastation to come out of this pandemic than what it's done to the minor league season. This is small potatoes compared to what we're going through as a society. Our job, our responsibility to our players is just do the best we can to get them through it and prepare them for what's ahead.
No doubt about that. Tanner Houck will be pitching in Worcester. When he does, a lot of people are going to be keeping their eyes on him. We've seen him at the major league level. Hard to imagine he hasn't had much time at the AAA level yet, right? He had that about a month there 2 years ago. Is it still a matter of a third pitch? What does Tanner Houck need to do to get himself really ready to stay at the major league level?
Well, I do think that third pitch is something that has a chance to make him a lot better. But, you know, I want to be clear about this. We all think Tanner's capable of pitching in the major leagues and, you know, doing so at a pretty high level right now. Some of that is just, you know, how we want to line up our depth to make sure that we have enough starting pitching to get us through the season. We know that we're going to need more than five starters. And so this way we get to keep everybody pitching. I would give Tanner a lot of credit just for, even though I think he knows and he's shown that he deserves an opportunity at the major league level and is capable of getting people out here, that he's willing to go put in the work to do everything he can to improve. You know, after we sent him down the first time, he went out there, he got a chance to pitch against, you know, the Mets alternate site, the Brooklyn Crew. And he went out there and he used that third pitch. And he competed, but he also took it as an opportunity to grow and just try to challenge himself to see how good he can be. So some of it's him and just, you know, showing what his ceiling is and how close he can get to reaching it. And some of it is opportunity and things lining up for him to get more chances up here.
Okay, here in Boston, Garrett Richards, a guy who put in so much work between starts, right? We talked to Dave Bush, and he was talking about how diligently Richards was working to get his mechanics back together. To see that work pay off with results, how gratifying is that for the organization?
Really great. And I think for everybody involved, you know, in particular, you mentioned Bushy and Garrett, and, you know, I'd include Kevin Walker in that group as well. You know, these guys are doing this every day behind the scenes, you know, and when you have someone coming into a new organization, granted, Garrett's had a long major league career, but he's new to this organization and he's new to our staff and everybody's trying to get to know each other. And then things don't go as well as he'd want out of the gate. And so you're searching for solutions, and for them to be able to put their heads together, you know, make a plan and then to get results as quickly as they got results. That's really satisfying for everybody involved. And it's great for us.
Offensively, one of the worries coming into the season was there could be a lot of strikeouts in the bottom of the order. We've seen that from time to time with this team. How big a concern is that?
Yeah, it is a concern. Obviously, it's not what anybody wants. Look, we know with some of these guys, strikeouts are a part of their game. We haven't gotten into as much of the power that's a part of their game yet. But we know it's in there, and I think we are going to start seeing it as time goes on. You know, seasons have streaks and slumps. Some of these guys are in some slumps right now, and it's magnified when it's at the start of the season. But nothing's changed as far as the physical ability we see. We just got to make sure we're doing everything we can to get them right, keep their heads in a good place, put the work in that we need to put in, you know, before the game and in the cage, and give them every chance to succeed.
And before we let you go, there's news on the Chris Sale front. What's the latest?
Yeah, Chris this morning did get up off a mound for the first time since the surgery. It was very light, you know, at the end of a throwing session just to get the feel for it. But it's a really big step for him. You know, this is kind of the next step, is obviously to take his throwing progression, you know, up on that slope and work towards throwing him off the mound with more intensity. So, you know, I don't want to overstate what happened today. It was very light throwing, but it is a milestone for him, and we're hoping we can build on that as he goes forward.
And so you've got a date for us, I'm sure, that we can expect him back on the mound at Fenway?
No, I hate to disappoint. We still don't have that yet. And, you know, as whenever it is, it is. We just need to make sure we do this right. But as long as things keep moving forward, that's the most important thing. You know, and we're going to make sure we're responsive to, you know, everything Chris needs throughout this process. And we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. I can't tell you exactly when we're going to get there, but we're making progress.
Whatever the over-under is on the number of times you'll be asked that question, take the over by a lot. That's my only advice on this.
I think we've already hit. We're already over, but that's okay.
Just adding to it. That's what we do here. Just piling on. Chaim, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
You bet. Good to see you.
Let's start with the finishing news there. A small step, but Chris Sale throwing off the mound yesterday, coming off Tommy John surgery. And again, he said, wasn't anything major, but it's a major step. How big is that step for Sale?
You know, being able to go from a flat ground situation to getting on the mound. When you're getting on the mound, throwing down an incline, that's typically more breaking down physically. So it's a step in the right direction as far as him getting back where he needs to be, throwing off an incline every fifth day. So he's going to have to pay attention to his body. He's going to have to kind of be honest and open with the trainers and the coaching staff to say, listen, I'm sore here. I feel great. All my pitches feel like they're working. He's going to have to talk to them about strength and building up that velocity to kind of get where he's going to be in the future. But absolutely, it's a great step in the right direction to get him back on the field sooner than later.
All right, let's get back to the minor leagues now. Hard to believe there have been no minor league games. And it was an interesting comment that I don't think there's any doubt that 2 years from now, we're going to see the ramifications, whether it's a whole class of young players who don't have the same fundamentals that we're used to seeing at the major league level because they lost so much time. But we have no idea. And again, Chaim is absolutely right. In terms of the devastation of a global pandemic, the loss of minor league baseball is but a blip on the screen. That said, we will see how this impacts. There will be an impact on the game of baseball because of the last year and a half.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great to see, you know, guys that their dream is to make the big league club at some point. They're actually going to have the opportunity now to help out, whether it's this year, next year, 2 years, 3 years, four, five years from now, who knows? So these are guys that are actually going to get out there and compete and show what they have. And, you know, by the time you're drafted and you're playing in the minor leagues and you're trying to make your way up, most of the fundamentals are ingrained in you. You're kind of just dealing with facing better competition, hitting your spots more. But you know what? It's a great step in the right direction. It's showing where we are as a country right now, kind of getting back to some sort of normalcy. So it's great to see.
All right, take me back to the minor leagues now. Let's we're gonna wrap this up with a couple of things. First, some minor league stories. Give me a great bus story. Give me a Lenny DiNardo, wild minor league bus ride story.
I'll come up with one real quick. When I was in Brooklyn, A-ball, you know, you've got your 7-8 hour bus trips and you got to sleep any way you can. And I remember one time I fell asleep in the little alleyway between all the seats. I think I had my my head on my jacket or something. And back then, you know, kids, please do not dip or chew tobacco. But someone in the back of the bus had a dip cup, which is basically 5 or 6 hours bus trip full of spit. And I'm laying down in the middle of the bus and we come to a screeching halt at a stoplight and you could hear a cup just bloop, fall over. And then probably, you know, a good half hour later, I'm still sleeping or trying to sleep. And I can feel a little bit of liquid kind of just dripping down my shoulder going from one end to the, to the other.
Oh.
Yeah, so I ended up getting crushed by some dip spit. That's pretty disgusting, but hey, it's a day in the life of a minor leaguer.
I didn't do minor league baseball full time. I did minor league hockey full time for a couple of years, and I'm older than you, so this is way back in the day. But this is a true story. And you know, I always said baseball guys had it easy because they got to be in a bus in the summer. You know, try doing it on icy roads when you know we would go to the Maritimes in Canada for 12 days. And this is a true story. We were busing. I don't remember where we were. And I used to play on the poker game in the back of the bus with some of the players and you did the whole time, right? The bus pulls out, get back, you deal the cards until you pull in. And where it's after a game and it's, you know, 2 a.m. because we were traveling immediately after a game. I'm sure you guys did too. And, we were right by the restroom in the back of the bus, right? The poker table was right in front of that. And we're sitting there and we're playing. I used to sit in the aisle on a cooler at the end of the table. The other guys would, so all of a sudden, like, excuse me, a guy leans over, you know, you had to lean over. So a guy go to the bathroom, right? Get hop over you to go in the bathroom. And it's the bus driver. And we're hurtling down the highway. So I'm like, no. So we're playing cards. I just, whatever. I'm clear. It must've been the coach, you know, wearing a door opens. The whole bus now is staring at him. Cause I yell out, right? Was that the bus driver? In the back of the bus, I was like, nah. Door opens, it's the bus driver. Steps back over me. So I get up and follow him to the front where Chris Jensen, captain of the Portland Pirates, is driving the bus. And we're all just, wait, what? And Barry Trotz, a great coach, who's now the coach of the New York Islanders, said, yeah, well, Bussy needed to go to the bathroom and we need to get there. I wasn't going to let him stop. But Jenner said he used to drive, you know, farm equipment or whatever. So
you're telling
hurtling
me that there was no stop.
There's no stop. He slowed down a little bit. He jumped in, put his foot back on the gas, kept going.
Like Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock right there. It's like just mid
just
highway.
Keep going. Just keep going. I always said you don't know life in the minors, and again the age will give, yeah, but until you wake up at 4 a.m. outside of Binghamton, New York, and Die Hard is playing on the bus movie for the 18th time that season, you have not lived the full minor league existence. So congratulations to all the young ball players who are going to get to live and get spit. Well, no, there's no more tobacco chewing. I'm sure they won't get the full Lenny DiNardo experience, but
no more of that.
It was the longest bus ride. You remember the longest bus ride you ever took?
Oh gosh, I don't know, but it had to be somewhere between 8 and 10 hours. You know, anywhere, you know.
You know, that was, it was after a game. Pack up, get on the bus, and go 10 hours.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, no waiting around.
I don't know how you guys did it. All I had to do was go talk in on you know, on a radio. You guys had to go perform. It was insane. I don't know how minor leaguers are able to do what they do. Really,
that's kind of the deal. When you talk about minor leagues, one of the biggest things is, you know, you're going to be on long bus trips. You're going to have no sleep, and you got to strap it on and go out there and play ball. You know, and it's a long schedule, just like in the big leagues, without the good travel.
Without the good travel or the comfortable travel. So the other thing I want to hit on before we leave, you're wearing a shirt from one of the great events, and you have a picture of the great event. The annual Hut Stove Cool Music event is coming up. Elise sent me all the info, and I don't remember any of it. So do you remember, do you know when the date is? It's virtual and it's coming up. What do you got?
It's coming up May 18th. And I just read this morning, actually, that Eddie Vedder is going to be a part of it this year again. There's a picture of him right there along with me.
All right, casual flex, humble flex, humble brag from Lenny DiNardo. Show me that was. That was who? Eddie Vedder?
That's Eddie Vedder.
And who's that, right there? Who's that on guitar? That's you.
That's me. Yeah, nothing humble about this. That's
so impressive. That's such a great shot. I can't believe you got to play with Eddie Vedder. That is so cool.
What an experience. Here's the poster from that event right there. That's back when we actually did it in person, which I'm assuming we will be getting back to as soon as possible. This year is going to be virtual. There's a ton of great, great musicians and former ex-ball players. Bernie Williams is going to be involved, who's an excellent Bronson Arroyo. Bill Janovitz, who I just want to kind of show. This is a pretty good likeness of Bill.
That's awesome. Right there.
He's going to be involved. He is typically every year. So it's a great event, great cause. I'm proud to be a part of it for the better part of the past couple decades.
Yeah, you've been a part of it all along. I've been a part of it for about 4 or 5 years now. I got to sing Highway to Hell, background vocals, which led to one of my proudest moments in baseball when I saw Peter Gammons the following spring training. He's like, "Hey, Tom Karen, last time I saw you, we were singing Highway to Hell on stage together."
That's Peter. I had Gammons. A nickel for every time I've heard that, right?
It is such a great event. It is such an amazing, the foundation to be named later that Paul and Theo Epstein put together and continue to do great work in Boston and now in Chicago as well. I'm pretty sure the foundation to be named later, ftbnl.org, one of those, will get you all the information, but it's going to be a great, last year's virtual event was really cool. And I think this year with Eddie's playing is going to be amazing. So I can't wait.
Yeah, you and I were actually part of the halftime show?
We did a halftime show with Eduardo Perez, right?
Yes.
He was with us? Yeah.
Yes.
And he was great. And I think Jerry Remy was with us, who's not here today. But wait, I feel I have to brag back now. So you got Eddie Vedder. I got that's Jim Craig and Mike Ruzioni and me. So you had the miracle of playing with the leader of Pearl Jam, and I just got to stand next to a couple guys who –
Can I one-up you real quick if we have time?
Yeah, let's go.
I've got the best thing in my den right here. Hold on, give me 2 seconds. I've got it right here. I just want to show you the my most prized possession in my den. I don't know if anybody can see that, but.
That is awesome. Now, what I don't have yet? I told you, that's my bobblehead, by the way, for those from the Sea Dogs, if you didn't figure it out. Now, look, this is all right, so we're going to do the tour real quick. This is the my favorite. This is the 75 Red Sox with Jim Rice, Fred Lynn, Dwight Evans, and Carl Yastrzemski autographed it. But where's my Jim Rice? Here's my Jim Rice. It's getting dark over on this side. Here's my Jim Rice. This is where, if you missed it, Lenny got the socks with our faces on it. And I have the Lenny DiNardo face socks that I'm going to put right here when I have you autograph them. So they're going to go in the corner over the Jim Rice.
Fantastic.
Autograph jersey. So
fantastic. That's awesome.
There you go. See, that was a different edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. Lenny, thank you for pinch hitting.
I'm glad to do it.
Trying to balance this thing. There we go. Had a blast. Glad you could do it. And we're going to, are you part on the Hut Stove Cool Music? Are you playing? Are you playing at all with it? Or
I don't know. I've got to talk to Elise to see if, as far as I'm concerned, any help I can give I'm more than willing. So if they need music, if they need commentary, I'm more than willing. So we'll have
maybe
to see.
If she doesn't have you doing something else, maybe I'll drag you into my thing. She's got me doing Harpoon is like one of their big sponsors. And so I'm doing like a pregame tasting Harpoon virtual happy hour before the thing with people from Harpoon tell us about their beer. So
I'm all in.
Find out, you know, yeah, it's
not a that wasn't thing. Very hard. Harpoon.
Yeah, if you want to help charity and get some free beer, join me at the Harpoon thing. So, but everybody should get out there. Lenny, it was a blast. I'll see you back in studio. We'll do this again sometime. Thanks, man.
All right, thank you.
All right, that was the PC and Jerry podcast. I'm PC. He's Lenny. You figure it out. Jerry will be back next week. Thanks for watching or listening or whatever you do.